The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's to do something that you actually enjoy, to find a partner or someone who can ride this crazy wave with you where you don't feel like you're just by yourself obsessively reading and watching the news.
You're reevaluating your life choices, like I like to say.
I found an enabler, and I'm so grateful.
You're welcome.
I think that our country is right now in the most dangerous position it's ever been.
Confident that there will be a peaceful transfer of power in January 2025.
If Trump wins, no, I'm not coming.
Take a look at what happened.
You're considered the most liberal United States senator.
Somebody said that.
Campaign rally is not a press conference. Why hasn't she had a press conference? She's the vice president. She can handle the questions. Why not do it?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
4 months from now, we will have an incredible victory, and we will begin the four greatest years in the history of our country.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Campaign Games, a game of survival for both the candidates and the voters. Rachel, that's going to be like the last time I say that.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, think about it, because we started this on a whim. We're switching gears. We're rebranding now to Rivera and Reeves. It's going to be a new tagline, new story, new day, new year. That's the last time.
R.I.P. Campaign Games. It was a good run.
It was.
A very quick and abrupt ending to a very slapped together the little podcast that could.
We're like, literally went down. Rachel messaged me, hey, you want to like talk about this? I think it was right after Biden dropped out or after the debate. It was somewhere in that window of time.
And I was like, I've never met you. We've never worked together. Let's start a podcast.
I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Did you see the reel that I posted this morning on about
it's
us?
It's funny. Yes. It's very funny. Go to our new Rivera and Reeves Instagram account, and you'll see the type of humor that you're in for if you follow us, when you follow us, because you want to.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically a reenactment, real life. That's how it played out. But so in that realm of our conversation, you know, we're going to talk, because Campaign Games came together pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. On a whim. It was really just initially just something fun for Rachel and I to do because we needed friends to talk about politics and our real life friends. Don't want to talk about politics and news and that sort of thing with us. They'll ask me questions about them, but they don't like want, it's not like the regular engagement.
Yeah, I think it's a rare breed who love to talk about it. It's more out of necessity for other people. So it's nice when you find someone, you're like, hey, you're my people. Yeah. You want to talk about this.
It works out. It's awesome. So for today's episode, because this is going to be our last episode of Campaign Games, our last episode of the year, because we are going to be taking 2 weeks off for Christmas to spend holidaying with our family, we're going to be covering just some of the top stories, like news stories, events that happened in 2024, and just our thoughts about them, kind of recap them, and why we chose them. But before we jump in, I just want to remind you, check out our show notes, because in there we have the links to our dedicated platform now for Rivera and Reeves, the Substack, the X account, and the Instagram. So go there, follow us, and if you're already subscribed to us, don't worry, as long as technology cooperates, you'll still be subscribed to us even when we rebrand and migrate our podcast feed over. Okay, so let's talk about this, right? Let's talk about, because, I mean, honestly, since 2016, every year has been a doozy of a year.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some big events that have happened in the last decade or so, but this year, it was, I mean, every year since 2020, people are coming to December 31st going, okay, we can breathe. We're starting a new year. And then that new year starts and it's, wow, we didn't think we could top the previous year. And 2024 proved eventful. I guess that's the word we could use. And there was a lot of stuff that happened in 2024. I don't think we're recapping just to fill another episode. I think our purpose for doing this is to highlight the events that happened that really serve as symbols of where the direction our culture and our government and our society are moving toward. It's not that these are just standalone events. They kind of represent the bigger picture of what's happening, both in a geopolitical sense, but also nationally speaking, where our country's at. And I think it helps to look backwards and go, wow, a lot happened this year. And what does that mean as we go forward? You know what I mean?
For sure. And I think it matters because as we're coming into a new year, a new presidency, there is a current vibe, which I'm hoping is authentic, of a shift happening. We've had a political realignment. We have Trump being reelected. He's only the second president in history to be reelected for non-consecutive terms. And honestly, he was written off. He was not expected to come back.
I didn't think he would either. Yeah, I really didn't.
Especially like the Democrats were like gung-ho on trying to make sure and do everything possible to make sure that he would not come back. And the dude is back and he is back.
And when
he's back big time. Okay. Like things have the general vibe within the country has shifted and it's very different from his 2016 election. This time he knows more, he's more connected, he has more support around him, and he's a completely different candidate. Like even to say that he ran as a Republican, but to even say that he's not your traditional Republican anymore, he has completely changed the party. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens. And in that, one of the things that Rachel and I were discussing is this political realignment that's been happening. And I remember the day, and we're covering this news not in any kind of order. So as we cover these stories, they're not necessarily, this is the number one, and this is the top. These are just the ones that we think wholly reflect what has happened and what is to come. When Trump announced that RFKJ was going to be supporting him in the upcoming election, to me, that was a pretty significant event because it symbolized and almost solidified what many were talking about at the time, that political realignment and how everything has changed.
Yeah, I think there was a seismic shift in kind of the brand of Republicanism that the GOP is going to represent. I've actually been frustrated with how to the center the GOP is moving. I've made that really clear, especially in terms of some of the more cultural issues like abortion, gay marriage, things of that nature. But whatever I think of it when I'm criticizing it, there's also the side of it that there's a positive way to look at it as well, because we're able to open up the tent, which is what Democrats always kind of characterize themselves. We have a big tent. We're so accepting of everybody. And now it's really become kind of a joke. No, you don't accept everybody. In fact, you have a very small view of what a Democrat can look like. And that's been made clear, which is why we see so many people who were traditional, either classic liberals or even just what some would say are progressive, going, huh, all right, I'm kind of sick of that game. And now I want to try something new. So you had Tulsi Gabbard, who was, she was a member of the DNC. In fact, wasn't she a DNC chair for a while?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, you have RFKJ. You have even online voices who are typically liberal coming out and calling out the Democrat Party. You have people like Joe Rogan or Bill Maher, who are not necessarily going to say I'm a Republican now, far from it. But they're willing to go out and say, that party's nuts, and I see why people are voting Republican. So the realignment was a huge news story of this year. I think it allowed Americans, too, to think about politics a little bit differently, because so many people have said, I'm sick of this two-party system. I'm sick of it. And I understand that lament. And this was sort of an answer to it. When you saw RFKJ be announced at that Trump rally, the first time after it was announced that he was going to kind of join hands with Trump, the energy in that room was electric. And it
was
wasn't, it wasn't contrived. I think that people are hungry for relationships and conversations with people they disagree with and to be able to work together on certain issues. And health, nutrition, vaccine skepticism, medical industry skepticism, those things are issues that a lot of people in America could align on, even if they see differently on other issues. So I think the political realignment was one of the bigger stories of the year, for sure. And one that will be really interesting to watch in subsequent elections.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch how the Republican Party continues, what happens after Trump, because he's only doing one term. Yeah. What is going to happen with the party in the future? Mm-hmm. Have the Democrats learned their lesson from how they've run the party for the last almost decade and how they've become mm-hmm. less and less open and tolerant to just general liberalism, but in the most traditional small L sense of freedom and liberty? I saw that coming. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember 2012, 2014, having a conversation with someone one time and making that point that the Democrat Party was showing signs of being authoritarian and being anti-liberty mm-hmm. and being opposed to freedom of speech. And they mm-hmm. looked at me like I had grown 4 extra heads.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? It's hard to see things on your own side. It definitely is, because I think we all have an idealistic view of what our party could be at its core. But I don't know. I just... We will see. Like you said, we will see.
We'll see.
It'll depend on who they run in the GOP in the next election, who's Trump's successor, or are they going to go a completely different direction on a lot of these issues? We'll see. It's going to be fascinating, but definitely this year's political realignment was real. It cannot be ignored by Democrats. It will be to their demise, honestly. If they don't reevaluate why it happened on the Republican side and why it can't happen on theirs, they'll lose again. They'll lose
sure.
until they figure that out.
Well, and then the longer that, Republicans are in power or whatever, mm-hmm. the harder it's for them to dig out, because you're going to appoint judges, you're going to do legislation. Yep. It'll be interesting. But let me tell you, I don't think that political realignment, there's a lot of things that have contributed to it. But specifically in 2024, I think one of the things that became kind of like one of the nails in the coffin was the reaction from the left after October 7th.
Yeah, I know we're not putting these in order, but I would say I think the biggest story of the year, in my opinion, it's hard because October 7th, I feel, is the most defining and exposed the most. Of course, we'll get to it, but the debate situation and the fallout from Biden.
Oh, for sure.
From it all of a sudden becoming obvious what was going on.
But
October 7th was such a defining moment for not only foreign relations, but also issues here at home that have kind of laid dormant or quiet, and it just everything blew up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I know that October 7th happened in 2013, but what we have seen in the last year.
You
since
mean 2023?
What did I say?
2013. It's been a long year, guys. It's been a long year.
Going way back in time. But I know it happened in 2023. But what we have seen in the year since it's happened has, mm-hmm. I think, had a huge effect. Like you said, not just with international relations, which we're still experiencing today, but what it exposed with the problems here domestically and how mm-hmm. the universities responded, what was tolerated, the blatant anti-Semitism that boldly bubbled to the surface. And you're seeing these kids, especially on the universities, where they did these encampments and essential occupations of the university quads and common spaces, and then blocking students, Jewish students or supporters of Israel, from even accessing their classes. And then you mm-hmm. have their presidents and leadership testifying before Congress and defending this mm-hmm. behavior.
Yeah, and it couldn't be ignored any longer that, A, we have a anti-Semitism problem in our country. That if it was any other ethnic group, would be headline news all the time. The stuff that's happened to Jewish centers, to Jewish spaces, Jewish people, gets like fourth page recognition in some of our newspapers of note. If that happened and was a hate crime against a Black person or Hispanic person or even a white person, that's their primary descriptor, front page. But we are seeing an uptick in violence. We're also seeing this kind of anti-Semitic rot on these liberal elite colleges that people knew was there, but then when it was given permission to just fly its flag high, they really did. And it wasn't just support for Palestine, it was support for the elimination of Jews and the nation state of Israel. And then also, it couldn't be ignored, the anti-Semitism in the Democrat Party. So all of that is kind of happening at the same time that the realignments are happening with the GOP and kind of a new wave of optimism with another Trump term and him kind of looking outside of the GOP bubble for people like Tulsi or RFKJ and the GOP going, what is going on? Yeah, we support Israel. What is this anti-Semitism problem where you've got the Democrat Party that's not denouncing the stuff that's happening on college campuses? And he's even kind of like flirting with it and talking about it pretty openly in support of, we need to divest and get our hands out of Israel. And you have prominent elected officials basically all but saying, we stand with Palestine. And you have the current administration being very weak on their support for the most part of Israel. So yes, it happened in 2023, but the fallout has been a year long, just watching it going, oh, wow, it has huge implications. I mean, we're still watching it. Stuff happened this week in the Middle East that would not have happened had October 7th not, or wouldn't happen maybe in the same way if October 7th wouldn't have happened. And it's just, it presented us with new conversations. So this anti-Semitism problem is a big problem. Also, we have an issue on our elite college campuses, or just in college campuses in general. It wasn't just the Ivies.
I remember, to me, one of the stories that dominated besides the encampments was when the presidents of these Ivy League universities were called to testify about the anti-Semitism problem on their campuses. And you had Elise Stefanik questioning the head of Harvard University. What was her name?
Claudine Gray.
Yes. Questioning Claudine Gray.
Well, they were arguing in the most smug way, in the most, you couldn't possibly understand the complexity of students and what we're trying to teach them, Elise Stefanik. And she's like, no, you're either anti-Semitic or you're not. Answer the question. And they were trying to kind of skirt around it and play footsies with it without actually saying, no, we're fine with our students shouting death to Israel. No one said it, but that's what they were saying. And trying to make it sound sophisticated. And it wasn't.
At Harvard, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
It can be, depending on the context.
I will ask you one more time. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
Anti-Semitic rhetoric.
And is it anti-Semitic rhetoric?
Anti-Semitic rhetoric when it crosses into conduct that amounts to bullying, harassment, intimidation, that is actionable conduct, and we do take action.
So the answer is yes, that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard Code of Conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
It does not depend on the context. The answer is yes, and this is why you should resign. These are unacceptable answers across the board.
It was, the argument was essentially, well, context matters, and it depends on the context. It just blows my mind because you compare it to previous years, when, for example, the whole George Floyd situation, BLM, trans issues, the amount of times that you have seen a speaker come to these colleges to talk on those issues and be literally shouted down, or students being disciplined for using divisive or dangerous language. But then all of a sudden, when you're applying it to Israel or the Jewish people, it's like, well, it depends on the context. Get out.
Yeah, it's yeah. And I think that COVID brought about a lot of a reckoning surrounding education. That's a whole other, we could do a series on that. But this was just another nail in the coffin where if people needed more proof that the rot in our education system isn't just in middle grades or the junior high and high school sector, it's also in our higher education, obviously. And it was just another kind of piece of evidence to go, yeah, this is happening from top to bottom. The indoctrination of students is very real. And the privilege of the American student on a lot of these college campuses was on full display.
Oh, for sure.
It was the list of things I need you to bring me while I'm sitting in my tent and not attending classes, or October 7th, really, I'm a pro-Palestinian activist and October 7th really bothered me. I can't take my finals, or some of these marches and speeches that they gave. I sat there with my kids. I'm like, do you see this? Do you see this?
Do not do this. Don't behave this way.
Yeah. Don't call me because I am picking you up from jail when they arrest you. Call someone else. But it was just another moment where you could recognize the very insidious ideology that's permeating our education system.
Well, and let me tell you, the political realignment, and honestly, you could almost argue Trump's reelection could not have happened because of the amount of traditional Jews that ended up, who was a voting bloc that historically has been a Democrat voting bloc, switched and voted for Trump, specifically because of the way the administration has handled its support for Israel, because of these universities and their rampant anti-Semitism expressed boldly, and how the Democrat Party as a whole, I think except for the, like, there's a few exceptions, like Fetterman, for example, who was like, had no tolerance whatsoever for it.
Yeah.
Would, honestly, let me, side note,
which is kind of a big story of 2024.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Fetterman, man.
He caught me off guard. I was not expecting. Totally. I was like, we may not agree on things, but I have developed some respect for Fetterman. Okay.
Yeah.
And, but Trump's reelection, this definitely contributed to it.
Oh, for sure.
Before we, let's talk, since we're
going to. Let's move on to the next story. What is it?
To elections.
What? Yeah.
Let's talk about what I would essentially describe as our origin story.
Yeah. The debate heard around the world.
Oh my gosh. I am
June 27th. I can't forget that date. That was a big deal. It's burned in my brain because I stood aghast at what I was watching.
The shock. I remember because we all know I'm a political junkie. We wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't. I have watched almost every single debate. I watch primary debates
for fun. We do this for fun. Other people are like, I can't, I'd rather do anything. Put absolutely. A fork in my
eye. I get myself some popcorn, get myself a drink, and I sit down and I watch debates, right? It's like WWE, but in real life. And so I sat down to watch the debate fully in preparation to see, because there was a lot of buildup. This is going to be, Trump hadn't debated in a while because he didn't do any of the primary debates. Biden was disintegrating before our eyes, but the media was telling us that was a lie.
Right.
And then there was an expectation that Biden was going to bomb. Like, people kind of expected it, but they thought it would just be like just your typical old man kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, it was not.
Bruh.
Way worse than that.
Out the gate, I think he had the opening question. And I've been watching, so Tucker Carlson has The Art of the Surge, which is a documentary series that goes behind the scenes following the Trump campaign. And there is an episode where all of Trump's posse, essentially, are in this big room and they're watching the debate together. In the moment of this video, J.D. Vance, who still had not been chosen as the VP at the time, is being interviewed by the documentarian. And there's a big screen on behind him showing the start of the debate. It's literally like one of the first questions.
Yeah.
And as J.D. Vance is talking, you see that everybody starts to get distracted by what is happening on the screen, because Biden is like rapid fire speaking, but you can't understand what he's saying. He's scratching his head. He's looking down. He's really hoarse. He just looks so weak. And it gets to the point where Vance just stops talking, and they're all just watching the screen. And then they pan over to Ben Carson, who's in the middle of a bite. And he just stops with his mouth open and the fork to his mouth with his eyes bugging, watching the screen.
Yeah.
And then Laura Trump, you see her mouth like, what the F? Like, what's going on? And I think that was just collectively a real-time reaction of how everyone that was watching the debate at that moment was feeling. I was shocked.
Biden does not sound good right now, so we'll see.
Make sure that it reduced the price of oxygen to $15 for a insulin shot, as opposed to $400. No senior has to pay more than $200 for any drug, all the drugs they conclude beginning next year. His debt, we'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our healthcare system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump?
He was right. He did beat Medicaid, beat it to death. I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence.
Well, I was watching because I make it a family affair. So I don't know how my kids are going to feel about that when they're older. Maybe they'll end up loving this like we do. Maybe they'll end up in therapy. But we all watched it, and it started. And I have been very clear with my girls that we never make fun of people. We just don't.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Make fun of them for issues that they can't control. But, you know, sometimes he stumbles and does stuff, like when he would whisper and lean towards the camera, or he would just mumble so much you didn't even know what he was saying, that it's oh my gosh. But very quickly, within about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, it became a cringeworthy type of, everybody started shifting in the couch. This is uncomfortable. I feel sad for him that this is his reality right now. This isn't funny. This is really upsetting in a sense, because, oh my gosh, this is our president who still has over 6 months left in office. And I think for the people who like to kind of put their head in the sand when it comes to politics and pretend like it's not important, this was one of those moments where
you couldn't
ignore it. And you had to realize the gravity of the situation. We have a sitting president who many of us have been talking about for years, saying something is not right. Something is off. He has dementia, or at the very minimum, he is aging so rapidly that he's losing his mental faculties, right? We need to be able to say this out loud. And people just kind of ignored it. Okay, well, yeah, but it's just the president. He has staff, whatever. This was one of those moments where it's, no, this cannot be ignored. This is not okay. Everybody needs to be able to say it's not okay. The media reacted, whether it was disingenuous or completely real, both are a problem either way, but they acted like this came out of nowhere. It was a defining moment. I think at that, everybody realized he's done. He cannot be our president again, even though they tried to convince us for a month or however long it took for them to dethrone him. Everybody basically was like, oh, buckle up. This has just got interesting because he can't be a president. He cannot serve another term. This is clear. So what are they going to do?
It wasn't just that it became clear that Biden was not well and that he could not serve a second term.
It became, yeah, clear he was so unfit. There has been a lie told
thing, because one of the things that I think it, especially they always have the spin afterwards and the reactions afterwards. And I think that after that, there has been a handful of times that the media gets mad for being made fools of. And then they react. And this was one of them. And the entire media machine for almost a month, I would say, shifted. And whether they were determined to take him out and dethrone him as president because they made them look like a fool and because they lied to them. Because the thing is that the story started to leak of how protected Biden was and how he hadn't had cabinet meetings and how he hasn't sat down for interviews and that requests were being made and they were being filtered through his staff. And all of these talking points were being fed to the media and the media was regurgitating them. And now they had been exposed. They've been exposed that they were either carrying water for Biden and not doing their job. And it completely kind of like was one of those other nails in the coffin that just solidified and expose the fall in the irrelevancy of the media because they're just going to lie to you in order
It kind of bleeds into what we think personally, the new story that we are personally very excited about, or the development in 2024 that you and I are benefiting from the most is
the death of the media.
Death of mainstream media. Yeah. And I don't even like calling it mainstream because it's not mainstream. It's not even mainstream anymore.
I've started using the term legacy media more than mainstream media just because it kind of symbolizes or translates the history behind them, the longtime influence behind them. And the media, of course, has a legacy. They did have their purpose, but they greatly mismanaged it. And now they're basically like Biden.
Irrelevant. Which is a really sad word to use describing a current president, but here we are. They've done it to themselves. And the Biden administration did it to itself by lying for 4 years.
Well, and I think that contributed. So the debate happens. We have that essentially palace coup that happens, which I think is another humongous story. But then in both of those, the media has a lot of influence because the media lied to us about Biden, got exposed during the debate. And then the moment they took him out, essentially, or helped, because I'm going to say they aided in the process of taking Biden out. And Kamala Harris was installed within less than 24 hours. They suddenly switched gears and started talking about how wonderful and glorious she was after years of saying that she was completely inept and nobody liked her.
Well, and that there was no problem with Joe Biden. He was the man for the job. He was fit for it. No one could beat Trump like Joe Biden. And quite honestly, that may have proven to be true because they ran a horrible candidate who Biden may have actually beat Trump if they had run him again, maybe, probably not, but definitely a better chance than Kamala. But the whole thing is just they lied and they lied and they lied for they gaslit, really, and mismanaged facts, especially during COVID. So people are already weak and weary and kind of broken down by that, trying to have to, quote unquote, do their own research and find everything out because nobody trusted anything that the medical industry, the news industry told them. And then you get the very obvious fact that they have carried water for the Democrat establishment for the 4 years that
I mean, they've been carrying it longer than that.
Of course, but it was a full court press because the second that they saw that Trump was
out,
a possibility and then an inevitability, they did their level best to not only make Biden seem like an adequate choice, but to make Trump seem like a dangerous, dangerous man. And they started losing people. People don't like that. Even people who aren't traditional Republicans or not traditional GOP MAGA people, they don't like what the media is doing. They don't like it that right-wing extremist doesn't mean anything anymore because that's what they think all Republicans are. So they lost a lot of people. And
I mean, what's fascinating about the entire thing and the way now you're actually seeing them recognize it. Like I just saw Leslie Stahl. Mm-hmm. She was doing an interview recently where she was lamenting the end of the media, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you see them lament and watch about how, well, now nobody's listening to us. Now they're listening to these podcasts and these people. And what's wild is that who saw that happening and who actually probably pushed that into and exposed it was Trump. Mm-hmm. Trump exposed it during his first presidency.
Right.
He saw it happening. Obviously, technology has a lot to do with that. We no longer have cable TV that everybody's watching collectively on a Thursday night. Not everybody's watching the same news. Everything is much more curated, much more individualized. We have algorithms now. But, you know, Trump saw that people were getting their information in alternative ways. And this would arguably be one of the first campaigns that could be categorized as like the podcast campaign that turned away. We have one candidate that took a pretty traditional role in regards to earned media of sitting down with news networks. And even though they were like a joke of an interview, MSNBC.
And there was only like three of them.
Exactly. But that's the route that they took. And even when they did make attempts to do podcasts, the formats were very different. They were very controlled versus what Trump was doing. It completely changed the game. And at the end of this election, once the media saw that they did not have the influence on the election that they used to have, they kind of had to come to terms with, yeah, I think we're irrelevant. And now you're seeing more people like ourselves pop up and I mean, yes, we use their, because they have the resources to collect the information, but we're the ones that dedicate our time dissecting their information and then making comparisons to primary sources that they're reporting on and just pointing out the inconveniences that they just happen to leave out.
Yeah, and I think that the next trend you're going to see in media, at least until they get it together and realize that people are not consuming the same format of news any longer. And I think that there's some issues I have with that. I think that people are losing interest in long form reading and their attention spans because of advancements in technology have dwindled. People really are gravitating more towards short clipped videos and less well researched news that takes time to digest and think about. I think that there's a benefit to that. But I do think that these legacy media stations have still not really come to grips with the fact that they are bleeding customers. People are pivoting and going a different direction. They like listening to people talk. They like sourcing their media in different spaces, say Instagram or TikTok. And they also don't want to pay an arm and a leg for a New York Times subscription or for a CNN subscription, something like that. But I think what we're going to see until they decide to pivot and join those of us who are using different types of technology to disseminate information, I think what we're going to see them do is criticize what we're doing and what lots of other independent sources are doing. I've already heard and seen many of them talk about the unprofessional nature of what an independent voices do, how they don't have the education or the understanding of what it takes to be true journalists or true reporters. And I think that's born out of a fear that their profession might not be important or trusted or respected any longer because they dug their own grave. Now they're having to lie in it and I think that scares them. And so you'll see the push to invalidate jobs like what we do, where, no, we don't go into a huge corporate building and we don't have the resources. We can't jump on a plane and go see a story unfold in front of our eyes as much as we'd want to, but we can collect the information, sit and look at it, much like the rest of America wants to sit and look at it.
But just doesn't have time to.
So, yes, the death of media, I think, was a huge, story this year, and it remains to be seen how and if they pivot at all.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's kind of every few years or decades, there's a reiteration of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember something very similar happening when blogs were first starting to pop up.
Yeah.
And print media, newspapers mm-hmm. were making fun of these stupid bloggers who just throw stuff up on the internet and then it's not mm-hmm. really vetted. And then eventually all of these publications ended up having to go online. And mm-hmm. a lot of them ended up hiring people from these blogs. So,
yeah.
We've seen this story before. It's just mm-hmm. different things, and we'll see how they pan out. Yep. But speaking of the death of the media and how they just love to manipulate things, let's talk about this, the Trump assassination, okay? Because
yeah.
the way they reported it to mm-hmm. me was disturbing, frankly. So Trump is in Butler, Pennsylvania.
July 13th, Saturday.
Yes, for a rally. Like huge group of people. And I remember, I wasn't watching the rally, but I saw the notification pop up. And to me, obviously we had the story of what happened. You don't know what's happening. Of course he pops up. Mm-hmm. The poor Secret Service is trying to protect his life. And this man is just popping up and throwing his arms in the air and telling everybody to fight and talking about how he needs to grab his shoes first. Mm-hmm. There was nothing more on brand for Donald Trump than that moment, yeah. you know? But then what ended up happening afterwards was an effort to bury the story.
Mm-hmm.
Am I crazy?
We no, had not at all.
Maybe if we're lucky, 24 hours of it. Then that picture got published with him mm-hmm. raising his fist in the air. I think Time Magazine initially was going to put it on their cover, and then they last minute hold it and changed it because they felt like it would help Trump too much right. in an election.
Why the exhibit 760 of why the media is dead, because they're not mediaing.
Well, and
do
then
what you're supposed to do, do journalism, report what happened. There was an assassination attempt, but instead they come out for the next couple weeks, question if he even got shot at all, talked about how maybe it was just some shrapnel. Like, you got to be kidding me, you guys. Every single person in America. I had Democrat friends texting me that day. Holy cow. There was just an assassination attempt. This is wild. Is this where we're at? And it's everybody can see it. But the media is, well, let's reevaluate. He brought it on himself. He's been using violent rhetoric forever. This is what happens. And it's wow. And you wonder why nobody's watching your show anymore. Okay.
Well, and then that was the discussion afterwards. It started becoming like a discussion of the rhetoric, right? Like
yeah, who's violence.
Trying to assign blame, essentially, the political yeah. violence. So we had Democrats saying that he brought it on himself because of the horrible mm-hmm. things he says and how threatening he is to democracy. Mm-hmm. But then you also have people pointing out, you have been saying that this man is a threat to democracy since 2015, essentially.
Yes.
Okay. You've been doing yeah. everything possible to take him out of the running as president. Mm-hmm. So think about the timeline of events here. You've had the debate happen on the 27th of June. Mm-hmm. Yep. July, when was Butler?
13.
Is Butler. There's an assassination attempt on him. In the midst of this, Biden is where? What? What is happening with him? He hasn't stepped down yet. His mm-mm. poll numbers are struggling. So this is what's happening. This is discussion in the media. The discussion mm-hmm. in the media is the threat to democracy that Trump poses, the fact that Biden has completely tanked this debate. His poll mm-hmm. numbers are falling. His approval numbers are falling. All of the polling is making it look like Trump is going to win by a landslide. And now we're going to have this discussion. There was literal panic on the airwaves at this time. Yeah. But it was Trump's divisive rhetoric yeah. that led this person, who we still have no barely any information on, by the way.
Isn't that interesting?
To attempt to assassinate the potential future president.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, so that was July 11th, you said?
13th is when the assassination attempt was. So it was like 10 or 11 days later.
That Biden pulled out on July 21st.
Yeah. And then he gave a speech, I think, on July 23rd or 22nd from a mock Oval Office. I don't even know if it was the real Oval Office, when his family was sitting in the background.
Yeah.
And he talked about not anything that had to do with him. It wasn't his fault. He just thought that it needed to be a new, younger, fresher path forward. Again, no one accepting responsibility and saying this man should never have run in the first place. And if he was going to, he should have made it clear it's a one-term presidency. But it's all just been smoke and mirrors. It's a charade is what it is.
Well, and I was just so grossed out because clearly you can see the media getting into high gear because now they're in a full-blown panic because of the assassination mm-hmm. attempt, right? Because yeah. typically an assassination attempt ends up kind of catapulting approval numbers, mm-hmm. poll numbers, that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. they do everything possible within, I don't know, maybe 48 hours. And I think I'm being generous to like, mm-hmm. think the story isn't that big of a deal. And let's bury yeah. it. And
gross.
And to the point where they're like almost collective. There were articles about how publications should not be publishing the photo of mm-hmm. Trump because yeah. it helps him in the election.
Yeah. It's not journalism anymore. It's the same, the front page of the New York Times on Tuesday, I believe, when covering the Daniel Penny trial. It was like, man who killed other man on subway with chokehold is set free. Are you joking me right now? That is an embarrassment to your paper. Who are your editors right now that are thinking that's okay? But a complete misrepresentation of what happened. They do it whenever they feel like something doesn't fit their narrative or is going to help some kind of politician, elected official that they don't agree with. It's so blatant. It's so obvious. And that's why America is like, no more. We will not get our information from you. And lots of these people agree with them politically, probably, and align with some of their overarching
yeah.
policies, but they're just done with this. Don't treat me like I'm an idiot. I can hear a story and make up my own mind. And it was very clear to all of America there was an assassination attempt. And then there was a second attempt, and they downplayed again. Well, what happened again? It really wasn't that big of a deal. The security at Mar-a-Lago is not good that this man was able to get. It's no, people are trying to kill him, and you're acting like it's no big deal. And instead of being actual journalists and reporters and talking about the larger issue that we have people in America who are attempting to kill a nominee for the presidency multiple times. Let's talk about that. That's the real issue. You're making the issue, well, we can't cover it because then he might get elected. It's sad.
It's really kind of dark if you think about it. And then yeah. this man, literally a few days later, pops up at the RNC.
Yep.
That was just, I mean, the RNC, honestly, was a story in of its own. But the spectacle of it, the showmanship yeah. of it, mm. the bandage on his ear, the final day when he walks out on stage and the light behind him where it just says Trump yeah. was all the
like
fireworks.
He goes over, he kisses the firefighter's uniform who was tragically shot at the rally. He hugs the American flags. It's a spectacle. And you can think whatever you want about it, but something about this man and his movement resonates with a large portion of America. And the fact that the media is unwilling to acknowledge that this is not the same guy that ran in 2016. He's different. Things have changed. His ideas about what he wants to do, his demeanor, his priorities. He's not the same guy. And they refuse to acknowledge that. And again, that refusal to dissect and really go deeper with news stories and talk about things in a nuanced fashion is why they are becoming increasingly irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, and they didn't really start kind of talking about it or even acknowledging it until there was this essential astroturfing of Harris has it in the bag. She's going to win the election. She's going to win Iowa because of some bogus poll that, from Ann, I forget her name, who's supposed to be like a renowned pollster. And now they're all like, well, yes, we got that wrong. I wonder why.
Yeah exactly. The reflection is coming. It's just really slow and not really very deep.
So, but yeah, it's been an interesting year. It's been a very interesting year.
Who knows what's going to happen in 2025?
I don't know what's next or what 2025 holds for the United States, for these political parties, for the media, the realignment. What will it look like in 4 years when we're doing another presidential election? What will it look like in 2 years when we're doing midterms? Right now, the Republicans have a razor thin majority in the House and the Senate, essentially. And the midterms will be interesting because it might be a sign of where the shift is. This shift to the right going to continue?
Yeah.
Or a lot of times the midterms is a moment where Americans choose to course correct, keep the politicians in D.C. in line for as much as they can. So we'll be back with another little segment.
I'm not even thinking about the midterms. I'm thinking about just getting past the
inauguration.
Like, I just want that to be smooth. I just want that day to go off without a hitch. Let's see what happens the first 100 days. And then I'll think about primaries. Well, we have confirmations.
Like, that's what I was about to say.
I haven't even, my brain is not even looking at midterms.
Yeah.
I cannot.
We have, we're wrapping up campaign games. Honestly, we put this podcast together on a whim. It's turned out to be a ton of fun. We've gotten really great feedback from all of you guys. Yes. Honestly, sometimes I'm kind of surprised that like people are listening.
Yeah. You're still here. Thanks.
Still here.
I had someone text me and say, oh, I look forward to Wednesdays and Fridays now. I was like, really? Oh, thanks. But then I think about some of my favorite podcasts. I know what time of the day they release and on what days they release because it's content that I value. And so we really appreciate that you guys have come along on this journey with us, that you value our voices in this, and we value you. And that's why we do it. So thanks for being here. We feel very blessed by it.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's to do something that you actually enjoy, to find a partner or someone who can ride this crazy wave with you where you don't feel like you're just by yourself obsessively reading and watching the news.
You're reevaluating your life choices, like I like to say.
I found an enabler and I'm so grateful.
You're welcome.
But yeah, we're very grateful to have you guys here to listen. We have plans for the future. So remember, we're going to be taking the next 2 weeks off, coming back January 2nd of 2025 as Rivera and Reeves, where we will hold each other's hands as we go through the first 100 days of the Trump presidency, confirmations. Honestly, who knows what could happen? I mean, right now there's allegedly SUV-sized drones flying above New Jersey that nobody understands why they're there. And so anything can happen.
There's so much that could go on in the next 2 weeks. You never know. We might pop in for like a 10-minute podcast episode in your feed if something crazy goes down. But let's pray that doesn't happen and we all could enjoy Christmas with our families and celebrate the reason for the season, the birth of Jesus Christ. And we can focus on what really matters because all of this is interesting. And Sadie and I love it, but it's not at the end of the day, it's not what is the most important thing in our lives. And really the only reason we can talk about it and laugh about it and be at peace no matter what happens is because of our faith in the Lord. And that's always going to be a constant.
Yeah. Having peace in that and knowing that this isn't it makes it so much easier.
Bearable. Yeah.
So, but just a reminder to check out our show notes and make sure you subscribe to our Substack. Like, go and subscribe to the Substack because the Substack isn't just an email list. We got plans for that Substack.
And if you would be so kind, share our little podcast that could. We have stuff up on our socials where we're sharing like our new branding and the name and our new socials. We would love if you shared so people can subscribe. So they'll have a podcast to kind of jump into the new year with and that will help them kind of dissect all this political stuff. It means a lot.
Yep. We're very excited for what the future holds. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for our final episode as campaign games, right? We will be back great, probably during elections. We'll do segments that are campaign games. But from now on, we are Rivera and Reeves, the little podcast that could. I don't know what our tagline is yet. We're still working those things out. But regardless, make sure that you give us a follow. So when we do the changeover, you're still here with us. Leave us a 5-star rating. Share us on your socials and tag us so we can share you back. And leave a lovely note because it really helps the podcast grow. And so thanks for tuning in with us. Thanks for being on this wild ride with us. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next time on Rivera and Reeves.
Aw. Bye, guys. Bye.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.